We know that the process of bhakti yoga, or the process of yoga, is not the whimsical, capricious imagination of some exploitative person many thousands or millions of years ago, or whatever, even hundreds of years ago. But it is a process which has been given by the Lord Himself. In other words, Krishna wants us to come to Him as our good friends, the born again Christians say, Krishna loves you. There are many, many examples of this, but one particular example which I read recently was about someone named Akbar. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he was a Mughal emperor in India. And he actually had contact with Jiva Goswami. They were writing some letters. And he kept brahmanas in his cabinet. He was not as bad as his grandson, Aurangzeb, who was vicious. But at one point, he challenged one of his brahmanas. There's a number of stories about him in this regard, but he's the one also who asked, when does sex desire end? I'll tell you that one later. But at this point, he asked one of his Brahmana ministers, you say that God comes to this world to bless His devotees, paritranaya sadunam. But if He's all-powerful, why should He have to come personally? He can arrange for His devotees through some of His agents or energies or whatever. He can adjust everything. Why should He come personally? So the priest said, I can't answer you now. I'll think about it. Then about 6 months later, Akbar had a son. Young boy, his pride and joy, my incarnation, it's me again. And so the heir to my throne. So he held a grand celebration. Literally, hundreds of thousands of people were called. You see that in India, it's possible there. With a billion people, 100,000 is not much. Small crowd. And there was a huge stage. Decorated fabulously. And the roads were scented with perfume and everything that you can read about in the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Dwarka. To some extent that was there, very opulent arrangement, and there was a giant golden basin, solid gold, not gold-plated, and there was one priest who had the baby in his hand, and there was another priest who had a golden pot, and he was pouring water, chanting of hymns and blowing of consells and horns and very grand ceremony. At one point, the child slipped out from the hands of the priest and fell into the basin of water. Young, newborn child slipped out of his hands, fell into the basin of water. Akbar immediately jumped up from his throne and ran down and began to grab his child, and the Brahmin came forward. Why did you have to go personally? You could have sent someone else to pick the child up. So Krishna comes to this material world because He loves us and He wants us to go back to Him, so He has given us a process by which we can return to Him if we so desire. But as the great practitioner, Rupa Goswami, the enlightened Goswami, disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has explained, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidam Vidhi Aikantiki Harer Bhakti Utpat Yaiva Kalpate. Anything less than following strictly the parampara, the shastra, the sadhu, and the guru, anything external to that is upat. It is simply a disturbance, it confuses people, it slows down the progress of devotional service, it should be rejected out of hand. We have to stick to the center, to the path that was chalked out by the Mahajanas. We can see in their lives what they did, and we have to follow. Mahajano yena gata sapantaha. So yoga also, of course, we have our yoga societies in Los Angeles and all over America. It's been on the cover of Time and Newsweek and Fortune 500 and whatever. Yoga is very popular these days. But people don't have complete information. That Ashtanga or Kriya or whatever you want to call it, the process, if you want good health, yoga's okay. That's a good set of exercises. But yam niyam asana, asana is meant for those who are, first of all, following niyam, and they're human beings, yam. They're cultured. They have some integrity. Not just anybody who pays a fee. Then asana, and what is that asana for? So that you can practice pranayama. Breathing. Now why should we practice breathing? The air here is so bad. I can see practicing pranayama with buying some bottles of pure oxygen. Pranayama in Los Angeles? Better to filter. Anyway, whatever. The purpose is so that one can dhyana, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So therefore, although it is a fact, svanustitasya dharmasya sangsidhir haritoshanam, the goal is to please God. The goal is to please the Supreme. We are his ansa, we are his dasa, 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 anudasa. We are constitutionally his servants, and our goal in our lives should be somehow or other to please him. And in Satyuga, it was possible by practicing dhyana, kriteya dhyayato Vishnu. We hear that people live for 100,000 years, and we've heard the story of Vishwamitra, who lived for, well, he was in samadhi for 60,000 years. Forget how long he lived. He was in samadhi for 60,000 years. But simply, he heard the ankle bells of Menka, and his meditation was destroyed. So it's not possible for anyone to live that long in Kali Yuga. And from what I've seen, there's not one. There are unlimited numbers of menkas walking in the street jingling their bells. How are you going to practice yoga? How are you going to practice brahmacharya? Kriteya dhyayato Vishnu, Tretayam yajato, and Treta-yuga was yajna, grand yajna, havan, fire sacrifice. But for that you require thousands of pure brahmanas, not these beady-smoking, pond-chewing, government servants who call themselves brahmanas. A brahmana is fully dedicated, patan patan, yajan yajan, dana pratigraha. He only has six kinds of occupation: studying shastra, teaching shastra, performing sadhana, and engaging others in sadhana or ritual, and accepting charity and giving charity in the form of books and prasadam and training, and accepting charity for doing that kind of work. So, in Kali Yuga, where are you going to find pure brahmanas? Very difficult. And you require tons of pure ghee. You know, in India, it's, well, maybe anywhere in the world, but you can't even get pure dalda, what to speak of pure ghee. There was a scandal in India a number of years ago where some Jain, and Jains are supposed to be, if they have any principle at all, it's to be a vegetarian. And some Jain businessman was importing the tallow by which they make vanaspati or oil, and it was beef tallow. And so all the brahmanas were swaha with beef, and you know, it's not possible in Kali Yuga. In Dwapar Yuga, temple worship was recommended, but people don't come to the temple in Kali Yuga. Even they're not supposed to, they don't have to stay here all day. If they just on the way to work come in and offer their obeisances to the Lord and beg for his blessings, do a little service, but nobody does that. They come on Janmashtami. Maybe they come on Sunday if they're very pious. But who comes up and asks, I've got a little time, I want to do some devotional service. My wife is not doing much during the day. Can she come and do some? Who's demanding or asking that? They don't understand anything about Sanatana Dharma or Vaishnava Dharma. They're simply superficially, externally, in name only, shmindu. So, only in Kalotad Hari Kirtanat, in Kali Yuga, this chanting of the holy names is all that is going to give us fruit. You can beat an empty husk of rice until it, you know, is in shreds, but if it's empty, there's nothing there. The process is not meant for this age. No one can achieve success. And the second point that Prabhupada emphasizes here, that Krishna is ultimately a person. So it's proven here in Shastra, just from this verse, and the Bhagavatam, of course, Shankaracharya Maima, he was the demoniac form of Shankaracharya, who supposedly taught Advaitavad. But the original Shankaracharya is none other than Lord Shiva. And he did not attempt to comment on Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Purana, because it's too clear, it's too evident. All Kaitava Dharmas kicked out, cheating. It's too clear. It's very clear. Kardama Muni saw the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How clear can it get? There's no room for interpretation. He saw the form. He didn't, you know, all of a sudden a voice came from the sky and Kardama was inspired, and he saw the form. Arjuna was instructed by Swayam Rupa Sri Krishna. I'm standing right before Arjuna. Madat parataram nanyat, there's no truth superior to me. Aham sarvasya prabhu, I'm the source of everything. What more proof do you need? But there is a group of people who are envious. They cannot get it. They can't understand. So we are very fortunate that somehow or other, causeless mercy, because I can't trace, certainly in this life, and if this life is the fruit of my past life, then there's nothing in my past life or anything I can imagine that I got this opportunity to associate with devotees and to understand that God is a person. God has a form. It may not be easily understandable, but the principle is so clear. People want cheap things. And when they come to understand the personality of God is too much, that means that they project, if I'm like this and I have this rotten form, then how could God have a form? And if God has a form and he's a personality, then it is incumbent on me to follow his direction, to surrender. People don't like that. They don't want to surrender to anyone. What to speak of to Sri Krishna? So, this is the disease. And the only way that we can, as Vaishnavas, do our duty to the best of our ability, we can't predict the results, or we can't force the results. It will be by Krishna's mercy, but the best of our ability, we have to distribute this knowledge to help save people. We have our sadhana, we have our internal development, we have our festivals. We have wonderful festivals. We want people to come, but even if they don't come, you know, in New York we have a saying, in your face. You know, if you don't come, that's your misfortune. We have a wonderful time, and we have wonderful prasadam and wonderful satsang. We have our lives, we have our families. We have problems, but there'll be problems for the next 10,000 years. We just have to get over it, grow and mature. But then our major obligation to pay our debt to our founder Acharya is to distribute this knowledge through his books and by teaching the books and by engaging people in devotional service. That is the yoga of this age. That is bhakti yoga as prescribed by not only Srila Prabhupada, by Bhakti Siddhanta, by Bhakti Vinod. All of our acharyas were very vigorous preachers. One who has got life, he can preach. And one of the most wonderful preachers, some of you may have noticed that this morning's Mangal Arti was a donation, it was sponsored by Narayani. So Narayani was a niece of Srivas Thakur. Srivas had three brothers. And at the time of Mahaprabhu's Mahaprakash Lila, his wonderful chanting and dancing in the house of Srivas, he revealed his transcendental form. So at that time, Narayani was a four-year-old girl, and Mahaprabhu gave her causeless mercy. He blessed her, touched her, and told her, chant Hare Krishna, He personally ordered her to chant, and she swooned in ecstasy. Tears began to flow from her eyes, and she chanted Hare Krishna. And because she was in that household of Srivas, big Vaishnav family, she got a lot of prasadam from the lips of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprasade Govinde Nama Brahmani Vaishnave. Mahaprasadam is none different than Krishna. And Mahaprasadam from the lips of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what a benediction. So Narayani, later on, she was married. And actually she was married in a place called Mamagachi, which is some distance from Navadvip. And there's not much known about her husband. He died quite young. Narayani became widowed at an early age. But she got a child from her husband, and his name was Vrindavan Das Thakur. So she was just an uneducated girl. She was uneducated. She didn't complete her MA, BA, or PhD. But she was the most auspicious woman, practically, after Sachi Devi, and she was one of the Janava Devi. There's so many auspicious women. But Narayani Devi, she bore within her womb and raised her son, Vrindavan Das Thakur, who Krishna Das Kaviraj describes and the Vaishnavas describe as the Vyasadeva of Chaitanya Leela. And he wrote a wonderful literature, known, and originally it was known as Chaitanya Mangal. But Krishna Das, there was another book written by that name by Lochan Das Thakur. And Lochan Das described some of the things that were not there in Chaitanya Bhagavat, some of the pastimes. Just like Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's great emphasis, or there's more emphasis on the Balila, the early life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Charitamrita is the later life. So similarly, Lochan Das Thakur wrote Chaitanya Mangal, and he wrote about such things as the conversation between Lakshmi Priya, or Vishnu Priya, pardon me, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu before he took sannyas. You can imagine, intense conversation. Because she was going to be widowed, and I remember going to a play with Srila Prabhupada in Calcutta, Nimai Sannyas, and of course Bengalis are very good actors, poets, actors, etc., but very emotional. You can't, unless you've seen a Hindi movie or something, you can't imagine the overacting, but there was a lot of crying in that movie, especially when Mother Sachi Devi. But Lochan Das Thakur describes things like that. But therefore, Krishna Das Kaviraj changed the name from Chaitanya Mangal to Chaitanya Bhagavat, which was written by Vrindavan Das Thakur. And the Chaitanya Bhagavat is full of wonderful stories, so much so that although Prabhupada gave us Chaitanya Charitamrita, he wanted the world to understand the Siddhanta. We need to be convinced. when you are elevated, just like we don't go directly to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we need to purify ourselves by understanding who is Sri Krishna, who is Radharani, before we can just enter into their intimate pastimes. So similarly, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains the Lord in five different features, in so many features, from many angles of vision. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wrote that his disciples should read Chaitanya Bhagavat 108 times. That's a lot. And he was constantly reading and speaking on Chaitanya Bhagavat. So, very wonderful literature. And the emphasis on that literature was unalloyed devotion, free from anarthas. Now, I don't know, I'm sure. Well, it's so important that in one sense, I'm going to read out, I think I've done this before, but it doesn't matter. If your aim is love of Godhead, beware of Vaishnav Aparag. And there's two main themes in Chaitanya Bhagavat, and one of them, very pronounced, is Vaishnav Aparag. There's no benefit. Even if you're right, you're wrong to commit Vaishnav Aparag. You have to be ever so careful and sensitive. Because we just don't know. Today we may be feeling that we are more advanced and he's less advanced, but tomorrow he may surrender and go ahead of us. Or Krishna may be appreciating his effort more. I know one devotee that I associate with, and very, very wealthy. He's definitely the wealthiest devotee of ISKCON, but I remember Srila Prabhupada's appreciation of him. He was not renounced like the Brahmacharis, even though he's been a devotee since he was 24 years old, but he would come to India and meet Prabhupada, and he would, you know, a couple of times he stayed in Juba, but mostly he would stay in five-star hotels. But his renunciation, because of his level, Prabhupada very much appreciated him. So we have to be very careful what we do. The Vaishnava devotees of the Lord are eternally pure and realized souls. Sometimes there are differences of opinion amongst them, which might appear like an argument, but in fact it is an amazing relationship between devotees. Foolish rascals who do not understand this exchange praise one Vaishnava and denounce the other. Such a mentality will lead to the destruction of faith and knowledge. Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya 5. Any person who sides with a Vaishnava against another Vaishnava and criticizes him is destined to be destroyed. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in 3.160. If Vaishnavas are offended, even by an assembly of renunciates, sannyasis, such an assembly is more irreligious than a group of drunkards. For the drunkards, there's still a chance of salvation. But for those who are critical of Vaishnavas, there is no hope for liberation. Even an assembly of renunciates, sannyasis. I know how hard it is to, in these somewhat troubled times, turnaround times, we're turning around and going in the right direction again, but there's a tendency, and I'm guilty, I'm sure, It's hard to avoid criticizing others, but it's best to, if it's your duty to find out faults and help devotees correct them, fine. If it's not your duty, it's not going to help you in your devotional path to always be meditating. I was just Ramchandra Puri, who was a godbrother of Mahaprabhu's sannyas guru, a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Ramchandra Puri, he had such a bent of mind that he was always looking for faults. And even when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was just looking, and he couldn't find out any fault. And then one day, he went to the house of Mahaprabhu, and he saw some ants, and he said, you must be eating a lot of sweets. This is not good for us. Prabhupada said, ants are everywhere, you know. Just because you see some ants doesn't mean that a lot of sweets are kept there. But that was his mood. He wanted to find fault. And then another godbrother came and told Mahaprabhu, because all the Vaishnavas, Mahaprabhu said, all right, from this day forward, I'll only eat less than half of what I've been eating. I forget what it was exactly. Anybody remember? He wanted one pot of rice, small pot of rice, which he ate half of. And up before that, the devotees were just feeding him, and they were all in ecstasy feeding him. It was a joy to feed the Lord. And if he had, you know, they got their joy because he ate more. It was a joy to cook for Srila Prabhupada. It was a joy. He could eat whatever he wanted, but it was a joy when you cooked something for him and he ate it, and you were in ecstasy for weeks afterward. You know, he ate my samosas. So then everybody complained, and they started fasting also. They started fasting because Mahaprabhu wasn't eating. And then another godbrother came and told Mahaprabhu, Brahmananda Puri came forward and told Mahaprabhu, this is his habit, he's always doing this, don't listen to him, please, we're all suffering because of him. Anyway, if you have that bent of mind to criticize, you're not going to benefit from it. Anyway, there's so many operats here. I don't know if I should read this one just to lighten up the conversation. Operats to avoid while preparing, offering, and honoring pizza prasadam. Anyway, I won't read them out, but there are 19 operats. Any devotee who is not able to sufficiently avoid the above operats undergoes serious risk of having his taste for pizza drastically diminish, even up to the point of losing that taste altogether. On the other hand, one who avoids the above offenses will be able to relish ever-increasing varieties and quantities of pizza prasadam throughout his life, in spite of the otherwise limiting factors of old age, disease, and high cholesterol. All right. Are there any questions? Yes? Huh?
In the beginning, you said something about the ruler, and then you were going to say something about
Akbar? Oh, you want that story? Well, that's a famous story. Okay. So, Akbar asked one of his ministers, when does sex desire diminish? Is it at 55 or 60 or... you know, 65, does it go away? No more sex desire. And the Brahma said, up to the point of death. And Akbar said, no, I can't believe that. All right. I'll prove it to you, but not now. So then sometime later, he came to Akbar, and he was a trusted servant. He said, please come with me, and you bring your young daughter. So Akbar went with him, and they went out of the palace, and then they went out of the city, and the Brahmin took him, you know, a long way from Delhi. And right actually to the edge of his kingdom, the border, and there was a small hut. And the minister told Akbar, when I call you, you come in with your daughter together. So then he went in, and there was an old man dying there. And the minister said, the emperor has come to see you. On your deathbed, he's come to offer his respects to you. And the man was lying in bed, but still he was excited. And so then the minister called Akbar to come. And as they entered the door, Akbar saw the man, and his eyes went to his young daughter. Didn't go to Akbar. The king has come, but his beautiful young daughter was there, and the man's eyes went first to the young daughter. I've seen that. That happens. I've experienced that. You know, you're talking to someone, and someone flashes by you. Of course, you kick it out, but the reflex is there. We get distracted by the opposite sex. And that's one of the reasons we're so entangled in this material world. And it never stops. Srila Prabhupada told a story about how when he was going from Bombay to Calcutta to catch the Jaladuta ship from Calcutta, on the train, a woman approached him. And, you know, in other words, Maya, in any form, can approach us at any time, and we cannot afford to be slack or inattentive. The answer I liked yesterday by Vaisheshika, by the way, he's not a Vaisha who has a Sika, he's Vaisheshika, not Vaisha Sika. Anyway, whatever. Vaisheshika, when he said, it's due to inattention that we're impersonal. Inattentiveness in chanting our rounds, inattentiveness in doing our service, and inattentiveness in dealing with others, hearing others, active listening to others, empathically listening. We learn so much how to write, how to read in school. Nobody is taught a course in how to listen, unfortunately. Although God gave you two ears and one tongue, people can't figure out, gee, maybe I should listen more. I want, you know, people, you talk to them, including me, and they're just waiting for you to stop so that they can replay their own autobiography. But it's due to inattentiveness in our reading Prabhupada's books and in our chanting our japa and so many things. So in the same way, inattentiveness. Any questions? Grantraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Vrindavan Das Thakur Ki Jai, Chaitanya Bhagavat Ki Jai.